We are now talking, let's have a short outline. The version we are talking about, the second version, did away with the Molière, and Hoffmann still wrote a lovely prelude, something which I don't think exists anywhere else in opera, a prelude which takes place backstage, as it were.
Yeah.
Isn't that the main attraction of the prologue?
Yes, the whole comedy is enchanting.
It is in a back, I think in a dining room where they move out all the furniture and they have to rehearse.
That's right,
there.
Well, it's in a castle and it's backstage. It is so particularly interesting because it says rather nasty things about sopranos and tenors, does it not?
Yeah, no, it takes a mask, the lovely mask from our faces.
Aram, you see what we...
Wait a minute, do we have such a mask?
I would not dare to have an opinion on that subject. I'll leave that to you. Now, what happens is that the tenor who sings Bacchus in the opera and the soprano, the wonderful dramatic soprano who sings Ariadne in the opera, appear both in the prelude.
That's right.
And they come out, and the story is, this is really, the whole thing is so wonderful about, true about
the
artists.
Farce,
the story is that the composer is forced to shorten it, you know.
She was on the crossfire. One comes and you have to cut something from the prima donna. She's crazy. And then you have to cut, and then I come cut something from the tenor. He's no good.
The composer has to cut the show because Mr. Jourdain, the original, or whoever the rich man is, said fireworks at 9 o'clock and I want both operas, the comic and the tragic one, must be over at the same time and you better change it. And the composer first says no, and then he is forced to do it, and then the prima donna comes over and says, take stuff away from the tenor. Nobody wants to hear those high notes all evening long. And then the tenor comes to the composer and says, well, you should know what they said better than I do. The tenor said to the composer, who wants to see that woman front stage all evening long? She hawks the show. That's what he said. Well, so we have a rather true picture of operatic life right from the beginning. Now, let me ask you this. Some people have felt... that the two parts in the version that we now hear, which is the only one that is still being performed, really don't quite fit together.
Which two parts? You mean
the prologue and the opera proper. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I don't think so at all. I think it's a wonderful introduction for the opera. Don't you think so?
I certainly do think so, but some people don't. They think there's really no connection. The first one is backstage gossip, as it were, then the personalities are different. You have the composer, who is the most important part. You, both of you, have sung Ariadne. You have nothing in the prologue. You come in, you say, I want to see the Count right away, and I can't have it. And take
but that is so amusing, I think. I think that that the curtain opens before the curtain really opens. I think it's very, very charming.
I agree,
very charming.
But it is something very special. You cannot think of any other opera that has, as it were, a glimpse behind backstage before the opera really starts.
I agree with you, my dear friend, absolutely, because I think with the seriousness of Ariadne, of the opera itself, that Vorspiel is a mockery. It is a good comedy, everything, but I still think it's nothing to do with Ariadne. It just showed that a crazy nouveau riche invite those famous artists and want to put on for his guests a show, and behind the scene is the they have a fight.
We will not have a fight.
No, I mean they have a fight in that Vorspiel. Everybody comes to the composer, say, do that, and to the end that poor composer gets half crazy.
Yeah.
You don't know what?
I like that very much. I like connection.
The contradiction, however, continues into the opera proper, too. The opera, we always talk about the opera Ariadne, what we now call the real act, as if it were thoroughly what the Italians call opera seria, but it isn't, because after all, our gay buffo characters walk in all the time. There's this, and I agree with both of you, it wasn't I who was saying that the two don't fit together. I just say it is a type of opera I'm completely... of its own kind. I cannot think of any other opera that has the opera in the foreground and the backstage thing at the same time. Also, the mixture of the serious part in Ariadne with the buffo part, for instance, you really should tell our audiences, Madame Lehmann, what happens in Ariadne at the beginning of the opera? I would like to hear about the scene What happens to Ariadne and then when Zerbinetta comes on, you know what I mean?
No, Ariadne, who has been deserted by Theseus, yes. Lives now alone on this deserted island, and her only companions are really the elements. The Naiade, who comes, is the element of the water, and Triade, the trees, yeah. And Echo, who is the empty voice of wind.
Yeah.
And these three, that is so beautiful, the beginning of the opera, when the music has this rustling,
yeah.
As if one hears the elements,
exactly.
As if one hears water and trees, yeah. And the wind. And she complains, she wants only just that death comes.
Yes.
No, she likes to be alone. She likes to be left alone, and she yes. sleeps
certainly.
Most of the time.
Yeah, no, she is unhappy, and she wants to die. And
she's miserable, but
yeah.
I don't know why.
She is
Madame Gerrit says she is miserable because she's been deserted by her lover. Isn't that a good enough reason?
Well, I don't know if she was deserted. She expects him. She said, bite aber not, ein Bude.
No. She means death with that.
At least she says she means it.
Yeah.
Madame Gerrit, I really think you should have sung Zerbinetta the way you talk. Because, let me get this in Zerbinetta.
It is true, I think, Ariadne.
I know you did.
Before she starts to sing, she sleeps the whole time, and they have to wake her up, those three girls.
Well, Madame Gerrit, haven't you done that sometimes when you were unhappy? You sleep. It's a good solution for unhappy.
No,
it is not.
Well, maybe too.
No, but why I say you really should have sung Zerbinetta is because that what you just said is perfectly right. Only Ariadne shouldn't say it. Ariadne says, I'm lonely and deserted by that man, and I won't wait for death. And then Zerbinetta, let's say, is a member of the...
Could you rephrase your last couple of statements while we take that?
Can I just
man Augenblick erholen?
Yeah,
I'm a bit of
but it goes very well. What I was saying is that, why I say Madame Gerrit, and I was joking, of course, really should have sung Zerbinetta. What do I mean by that? Zerbinetta is the female member of that buffo company that comes in interrupting the serious part of it all the time. And she says, when Ariadne said, well, I'm so lonely and I'm deserted and I want to die. And she said, don't tell me any stories. You're not waiting for death. You're just waiting for a new boyfriend. Isn't that what
yes, that is true. That is true, but I don't think that Ariadne will agree to that.
She doesn't.
Ariadne waits for it. Then Bacchus comes, the god of joy and wine.
Everything
and
is all right.
Well, this is a good question. When is everything all right? When she goes with him, does she still believe he's dead?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. When he takes her in his arms, then she realizes that it's life which takes her again.
Yeah.
I think so.
And does anyone remember what Zerbinetta says after that? Zerbinetta says, well, in her aria, when she said, well, trouble is, we like so many of them. And then she says, all the time a new one comes.
Yes,
see,
and it's always the same.
It's always
delight.
The same. We obviously will be faithful. We never are.
Yeah.
And when the new one comes, we remain stum, stum,
stum,
silent, silent. Another word to say, that's what she says at the end.
Yeah.
Now,